Pat's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us. Hour number three begins right now. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the show, that's what you got. You got to text me. Just a few texts, and then we'll figure out the rest of these results, and we'll do kind of a quick recap. Joel, I wish Trump could have another 12 years in office. Unnamed Texan, the problem with going against your party is helping Democrats, and they can just be done. The Democrats are destroying the country. Too many people don't care about that or actually want that. And then Massey didn't get beat because he voted against some Trump's initiatives like other congressional members. It became apparent that he was anti-Trump, and that was a bad strategy. Trump's in charge right now. That's something the establishment had to come to grips with, and then they kind of have kicking and screaming, but they have. Trump's in charge. This is his party. Maybe it ends in 3 years, but it's his party. I do think on the other side of the equation here that Massey losing and the losing the way he did, it erodes some of Trump's support. You got to remember, building that 2024 coalition. Remember, Trump went and spoke to the libertarians. But it did become very anti-Trump at a certain point. And it's an us versus them. You may not be them, but what you're doing is helping them. And that was the ultimate problem. That there was just too much there to overcome. This was similar to Justin Amash in Michigan. He had the same problem. And you don't fault the guy. He voted on his core principles, his core beliefs. But when they started to align more with Democrats, he was an easy target. In our system of government, it is what it is. Listen, believe in the Constitution, talk about the Constitution. But none of that matters if you can't win an election. The most fundamental thing in our constitutional republic is how we choose the people to represent us in Washington. Everything else is just a philosophical exercise. If you can't win the election, then what's the point? You're just a commentator, a pundit. You really want to change policy, you got to win the election. And we have a market-based system here. It's not perfect, but it is what it is, and we know what the rules are. We knew what the rules were going into it. I'm not here to say either one is right or wrong. That's a subjective judgment that each of you have made. But there are certain realities, political realities, that we have to accept in our system of government. And elections matter. So you could be a constitutional conservative or constitutional libertarian or whatever you want to categorize Thomas Massey as. But if you don't win the election, which is a core part of that, then it's all for naught. It's a system we agree to, the system we function under. We don't like the system. We can change our system. It's like I talk about this all the time. It's sort of similar to like the Second Amendment. We have a Second Amendment in this country. You have to operate within those parameters. We have elections for Congress in this country. You have to operate within those parameters. And Massey couldn't do that. Sure, he got outspent, or he had the Trump machine working against him. But the people of his district chose to go in a different direction, and we have to respect that. How long is it going to be until they shift from hate Trump to hate Vance, as soon as Vance runs for president? Interactive poll showed me some exit polling here, and this was the one everyone's talking about. Age 17 to 55, Massey did well. Age 56 and above, Gallarin did well. Well, but older people vote. They take it more seriously. That's another reality, Mike, that we have to come to grips with. We always do this. We always say, the Generation X vote, the Millennials, Gen Z, we got to win those hearts and minds. Yes, you do, but it's an investment in the future. Because right now, and it's always been this way, people in a certain age demographic don't vote. That's not who makes decisions. Would we like that to change? Absolutely. But the reality is, the numbers don't lie. There's also something about being a sort of a starry-eyed idealist at a young age, having to go through the rigors of life and realizing that, you can't take a page out of a textbook and run the federal government. There's too many people have a say, too many parties involved. Three branches of government, 535 members of Congress, a judiciary. And you can't just say, well, I'm one of thousands, and I'm this is what I believe, and this is the way I'm going to do it, and I'm going to hold everything hostage unless I get my way. You could do that, but it's going to have repercussions. And this is what Thomas Massey's having to live out this morning. Trump has spent more on the deficit than any Democrat. These geezers are delusional. I'm a young guy, 21. I wish there was a Massey can in Alabama. Boomers are in psychosis. Trump psychosis. Wish I could afford to go offshore fishing this summer. Thanks, Trump. You may say Republicans are no one to blame but themselves, but not for young people. It's pretty clear the boomers are to blame. Well, the boomers are the ones who vote. Boomers have more votes than the young people do. You got to get your peers out to vote. Sorry, that is the reality. They have the opportunity to vote. They choose not to. Well, I could talk about all this until I'm blue in the face. They're not listening to the Jeff Poor show. They're listening to, I don't know where they get their news, podcast, Joe Rogan. But there's just not enough people who are willing to do their part and engage in the civic process. Mike, I really think it's more of a big shift to society. There's a clear distinction between the older dying generation and the one that's coming next. But it's always been that way. Young people have always had the idealism. They've always been more idealistic than older people. We just did this. Like college professors and young people, they think, and this is why so many young people are liberal. They think that you could just centrally plan everything, but we're a society of sinners. You can't just look at a person on a sheet of paper and assume that they're going to act and behave the way that, that you expect them to. We all come from different walks of life. We all have different points of view. And then that's why the older voter is less idealistic. It goes with the least idealistic of the choices, typically. the boomers may die off, but these young guys will become boomers, or, you know, in that age demographic, and they'll learn, they'll get beaten down by the system. Ultra Runner, your critique of our system is spot on. It brings to mind the old quote, democracy is the worst form of government except for all the others. That's what Joey Clark said. But whether or not we like it or not, that's what we have. And, you know, I'm sad for you guys who are disappointed in the Massey outcome. I think it's good to have a few voices in Congress like that. But it's easy to understand why it happened. It's more important to understand why it happened. You can be mad about it, but you know this is the people spoke, and you have to respect that. You know, we may not like AOC. We may not like Adam Schiff. We may not like a lot of what goes on. But when it comes to elections, that's direct democracy. Where I have problems is when we have people who aren't necessarily elected, like a speaker or a pro tem or a majority leader or whatever, and they're telling they're forcing their members to vote a certain way that's antithetical to their district's wishes. But that's politics as well. That's our system. Massey got exactly what he deserved. He sounded like a sore loser, especially with the found my opponent in Tel Aviv to concede, a despicable scumbag. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. Continuing on here, we said Jim Carnes lost. Wanda LeGavan lost. Rick Ream held on. Steve Klaus won. He had an opponent. He won 3-1. Not many. I think always Storm and Norman Horton or something was. He beat him again. Francis Holt Jones, Joe Freeman runoff. 42-39. That was razor thin. That race will be fascinating. It's. And we talked about it last night. It's kind of a unique district. You have a, you know, you have the canal there. My quick take, Francis Holt Jones, strong north of the canal. Foley, that's her family. That's her roots south of there. And I got to look at the precinct. So I know that the folks in Fort Morgan were not happy with her. It becomes a toss-up with Gulf Shores and Orange Beach. The other one, kind of a shocker, I'm not going to lie. Danielle Duggar defeating Matt Simpson. What went wrong for Matt Simpson? I think it's in part, it's just the changing of the district. You're getting more people from other parts of the country, of the state, moving to that district. Simpson had a built-in advantage. He was a Daphne guy. He is part of the Daphne mix. And Danielle Duggar won the outsider. But some of that is, you know, just sort of his, what he did as a member of the legislature. We'll pick that up on the other side. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. Back to the Matt Simpson, Danielle Duggar race. Matt Simpson's, I mean, maybe he got too far ahead of his skis on ethics and gambling and some of that. And, you know, like I said, it's one of these house districts with a lot of changing population. It's a growing population. And it's sort of like the Mo Brooks phenomenon when he won Shelby County in 24. You have a coached up electorate very much focused on more right-wingy Fox News-style brand of conservatism and having the local connections, which Representative Simpson certainly had, did not matter as much. I need to look at the precincts. I just haven't gotten that far into it yet. A little surprised by the outcome. And some of those advertisements there at the end may have swung it her way. But that's that's the way our system works, as we've been harping on with Thomas Massey all morning. Any others? Pringle winning big last night. I don't think that was much of a surprise. Sam Jones as well. Adeline Clark, a little tighter there, but still almost 2-1. And there you have it. That's sort of the whole rundown. But we got Tommy Tuberville, your gubernatorial nominee, and we had to, I guess, pretend that there's a competitive gubernatorial election with Doug Jones, but I don't see that. Doug Jones, keep it within 10 points. That would be good for the Democratic Party, and maybe the Democrats we'll get something out of it, a built-in advantage. And think about it like this. If you give Democrats a reason to get out and vote, that they don't have to just cede it to the Republican, then you have coattails and Maryland lands and, you know, some of these other more local races are winnable for Democrats. But that's the best they can hope for, I believe. Barry Moore, it looks like Jared Hudson in runoff. I wouldn't sleep on Jared Hudson. Just the way that district, I mean, the way he, his DMA, Birmingham DMA, the way he performed there. Potential low turnout runoff in June. And if you run up a score in your hometown, there's just more votes in your hometown. Barry Moore support, if you look at it, it's scattered throughout the state. And then finally, the one other big marquee race, well, two marquee races, Catherine Robertson, Jay Mitchell. Mitchell's got a lot of work to do. I think he's got to fine-tune his message a little bit. And John Wall, I think, outperformed expectations. He got into race late. Wes Allen, super early. And Wes Allen's been running at a consistent 35%. I said his window was 25 to 30. He outperformed that significantly. Can he build on that? But Wall, I expected in the 20s, and then that turned out not to be the case at all. John Wall looks pretty strong with the Trump endorsement in his back pocket. But if you're Wes Allen, I think you have to be somewhat pleased with the outcome, with the returns. You probably outperformed your expectations. Looking at a text here. I saw where Wendell Gavan was a candidate for mayor of Birmingham. Is that legit? How low could they go? She lost by a significant margin. Adam Gavan losing makes me happy, but what do you know about who defeated her? Also, were the numbers in Baldwin County AL1? I had those in front of me. It was pretty decent for Rhett Marcus in AL1. On Wanda Gavan, the lady's name's Lumpkin, I believe. She was backed by Mayor Woodfin, the mayor of Birmingham, and by the Business Council of Alabama. Just two very powerful forces. So anything less than 50% is a runoff. Yes, so the top vote getter doesn't get 50% plus one vote. It goes to a runoff. Mike, I'm not complaining about boomers being themselves. I just 100% believe this demographic shifts is the main reason for Iran fight right now. They know this is possibly the last shot to take huge portions of Lebanon and to completely control Gaza. Ben writes, Simpson shouldn't have made a Jubilee a free-for-all. And one more, I voted against Matt Simpson. Basically because he was a recipient of so much money from a gambling pact, I couldn't count that he was bought on that issue. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Alabama. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. I got a glimpse of the Matt Simpson, Danielle Duggar boxes here, and about as I expected. The Daphne boxes kind of on the west side of Highway 98 went for Matt Simpson. Spanish Ford and east of 98 went for Danielle Duggar, and I think that was the difference. There's sort of a, and I learned a little bit about this covering mayoral elections in Daphne, that, you know, you have like an entrenched establishment in Daphne, but in this time where Baldwin County is growing so much, you're getting a lot of new people, a lot of new voters who don't have those same loyalties anymore. And it's a different district than it was 10 years ago. And that's, you know, it's times are changing. If anything, it's probably has something to do with that. Joining us now, he is the publisher of the Trussell Tribune, regular on this program, but Scott Buttram is with us. Scott, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing this morning, Jeff?
I'm running on fumes, but, you know, this is what you live for. This is, if you can't go now, then when can you go?
Listen, I'm with you. I was thinking this morning, we probably have about the best job in Alabama today because we get the armchair quarterback. And that's kind of the seat I want to be sitting in right now because it doesn't appear any other seat in the state of Alabama is safe.
Well, there were a few upsets in legislative races.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised Mo Brooks didn't perform better.
Me too.
That's another one of these circumstances, I guess, where, you know, Mo Brooks is a longtime Huntsville, South Huntsville guy, but, that's a place that's changed.
And I haven't looked at state returns. You may have some information on this. I'll tell you, the turnout in Trussell was horrendously low at midday.
It seemed to pick up throughout the day. It started out not great. And then it seems like it ended up about where it always does. And that's saying something given the circumstances of the national politics.
Right.
But I think the Birmingham market, it's a player in the Senate race and Jared Hudson's returns. Yep. It was fascinating to watch. I know you were at graduation last night, but you're sitting there, you're watching it go kind of plod along all night. Marshall, Barry Moore, starts to pull out in front. Moore looks like he's got kind of a widespread, you know, presence. And then when the Birmingham boxes, Jefferson County boxes, which are always late relative to the rest of the state, start coming in, I mean, you just saw Jared Hudson shoot up like a rocket.
So Hudson.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, I was going to say, so you look at, you think about it in a month from now when there's a runoff. And it may not have been as close as those Hudson guys would have liked, but they got a playbook here. If I'm advising them, run up the score in Birmingham. You do a little bit down here. You do a little bit in Huntsville. You try to maintain what you got.
Yeah.
But you've got to get your Birmingham voters out. It's centralized. It's localized. It should be easy to do. You can really spend in that market. He can raise the money to do it. And you go big in Birmingham and you hope for, you know, sort of lower turnout in the rest of the state. And then you got a shot at being a U.S. Senator.
Well, you know that the Tribune covers 9 cities in Jefferson and St. Clair counties. And we have had Jared on long before this race. We've had Jared on the Tribune. We've had him on Tribune Unscripted. I think we've done, I think he may have been in for a couple of interviews, but we've done multiple stories also that he was involved with in working with local police departments on this human trafficking stuff and child predators. So he has really had a high profile in Metro Birmingham for several years, and he's done a good job with it. It's all been from a very positive standpoint. He also ran for Jefferson County Sheriff 4 years ago. Got a lot of name recognition. Didn't win that race, but his name certainly got out there. So he had built a good following in Jefferson County. When I saw those were the numbers they were still waiting on, like a lot of people, I'm like, yeah, I think Jared's in good shape. If he's waiting on Jefferson County numbers, and sure enough, they came through. I'll also say this, Jeff. I think Steve Marshall was in a really good position 2 weeks ago. I think it would have probably put him in the runoff with Moore. I think he was in position to be there. And I have heard this. We hear it a lot, but I've heard this so consistently over the last 2 weeks that when Marshall saw Hudson surging in the polls and Marshall went negative with his campaign advertising, it bit him. It bit him. Because I heard person after person after person saying, yeah, I was okay with Marshall, but I don't like what he's done with Jared Hudson. I'm voting for Hudson now. And I think that was really a swing at the last minute that put Jared Hudson in the runoff. I'll also say this. I think Barry Moore had a very safe runoff in front of him if it were he and Marshall. Moore's going to have more trouble with Hudson than he would have with Marshall.
Well, I'll say this, though. I do think there's a too-big-to-fail phenomenon with Barry Moore. He is the Trump guy. He's going to have club. He gets this close. Club is going to look at it and say, well, yeah, we're going to. And the Hudson guys, you got to be ready for whatever they're going to throw at you. And they don't play nice at all. Yeah, they're coming.
They're done. They're coming. And Hudson's going to have some money to get his message out, which, by the way, I think now that he's made the runoff, I think he's going to have some money flowing into that campaign he didn't have before, because there are people out there who don't want Barry Moore. So I think you're going to see some money come into the Hudson campaign that will give him the opportunity to get his message out. But I contend, and I agree with everything you just said, but I contend that Hudson will be a lot more trouble for Barry Moore than Marshall would have been in a runoff scenario.
I agree with that. I do agree with that. I think the Marshall path to victory really had to go through Birmingham, and Hudson was the impediment there.
He really was.
I mean, yeah, sure, it's a 3-3 race. Yeah, it's easy to say, but to win statewide, Marshall was going to have to do well in Birmingham, and then essentially they just kind of split everything else. But how many Barry Moore voters or how many of the Steve Marshall voters are going to go with Jared, and how many are going to go with Barry Moore? And that's hard to tell.
It is hard to tell. I feel like Jared's in a better position there. And I will say this, and this is not to say that there's any problems with Barry Moore. I like Barry Moore. I've liked Barry for a long time. One of his relatives worked with the Tribune for 15 years. So we've got a high opinion of him. Jared Hudson is a genuinely good person and good guy. And I think people are picking up on that, and I think that helps them as well. We could talk about the state races, and there were some interesting turnouts there. But legislatively across the state, I'm going to just tell you, man, I got a chance to catch up as I was drinking my coffee this morning, and I was floored with some of the legislative results that came back. You mentioned one as we were coming on the air. I did not have Matt Simpson losing in a primary. That caught me. Probably didn't catch you off guard, but it caught me off guard.
Well, yeah, and I thought it was going to be close, and I thought it would be, 49-51. But something just eats at you, like, well, he's the incumbent, and people know who he is. It's just the local politics, and it's Daphne, which I'm sure in some ways is similar to Trussell, because you have this sort of towny establishment. They drink together at Mancy's or whatever, and they all know each other. Their kids have played, baseball together, and they sort of coalesce around one guy. And in this case, it was going to be Matt Simpson. And the problem was that they're outnumbered now. The city's grown so much. And now that district has Spanish Ford in it. It just became hard to hold on to it with this old playbook.
Well, 2/3 of Trussell did not grow up in Trussell. The population here has just exploded over the last 20 years, and so the dynamic is changing a bit. The shocker in our area was Dan Roberts. Probably, you may disagree, but I think Dan has probably been the most reliably conservative senator in Montgomery. That's been his reputation. I mean, he's the guy that never goes alone to get along. He makes his conservative stand on every single issue, and he's been relentless about it. I'm anxious to see part of his district does come into Trustville, a very small part. I'm anxious to see how he did at the Trustville polling booths versus Mountain Brook, where he lives. But that caught me off guard. Very surprised to see Dan Roberts lose in the primary.
Scott, you've been in the Birmingham area forever. I mean, when does Mountain Brook ever elect the sort of, you know, textbook conservative? It's not that kind of place.
Well, Old Mountain Brook was.
But it's not that way anymore. I mean, he's as good as you could hope for. Absolutely. I think for conservatives being a state senator from, I tell people this all the time. Well, he's not a fighter. He's a Mountain Brook guy. Guy is going to be what he is, and he's as good as you could have hoped for. Just wasn't enough. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think you put Vestavia in the same sentence right here. Mountain Brook and Vestavia, similarly to Trustville, but in a different way. A lot of people living in those two cities that did not grow up in those two cities. And they're moving in with a concept of Mountain Brook or a concept of Vestavia or a concept of Trustville that doesn't really align with the city originals that were there generationally. It's a different thought process, a different group, far more moderate. And you know, I'll just say in some ways, far more liberal than what was there originally and established those communities. So it's going to be something interesting to watch going forward. I'm not so sure the vote was not for Ortiz as much as it was against Roberts, because Roberts didn't give you a whole lot to be against. He pretty much did what you expected him to do. He, as you said, did it very quietly. But, you know, it was a little flashy campaign and the new guys coming in. And we saw that play out, you know, in a couple of places around the state. Greg Albritton is another one that I was kind of floored to see the results there. Now, you're down there. You may have seen a different dynamic at play. I'll also tell you, I wasn't terribly upset about seeing that.
Well, and I'll say this. I mean, you don't see the general fund chairman lose his election that often.
No.
And the Albritton thing, I mean, it was a blowout early. Albritton tightened it up, but Albritton's got the same problem. He's changed his district. He used to be a straight line from Mississippi to the Florida Panhandle border, you know, and it had the Porch Creek and it had, you know, and that, I mean, he did well. Monroeville, you know, just places, Clark County, he did well. They have redistricted. And for whatever reason, Senator Albritton has insisted on being in the Mobile delegation, so they gave him part of Mobile, but that's just not his voter. It's not the Baldwin County voter. It's not the Mobile County voter. It is Escambia County. It is north of the Dolly Parton Bridge.
Right.
And he was trying to win there, and I think that's what cost him in the long run. Something else, like, but you look up and down these Senate races. Jabba Wagner had a race. I mean, that was a lot closer. Jim Carnes loses.
That's right.
Yeah, you had some, you know, Alabama's changing. It's a antiquated playbook. I've been saying that this entire cycle about the way these consultants are advising their campaigns to operate. But it's also probably less foreseen by me, just the people who live here. They're not necessarily of Alabama or of that locality in Alabama.
That's right. That's right. And which means we're going to continue to see this trend. Carnes, glad you brought that up. You know, Jim's been another reliable conservative voice. But it's just kind of weird how some of this stuff played out. And it really did catch me off guard. Another thing about Albritton, I wondered about this a year. I think it was a session a year ago when he was just openly saying publicly, I serve the Porch Creek Indians. That's my constituents. Well, I understand that. They are a force in his district. They are a force financially. I'm sure they have poured a ton of money into his campaigns over the years. But there's a lot of other people that live there that don't agree with their position on gambling, things like that. I think some of that came back to haunt him as well.
I'll say this, gambling is a monkey wrench thrown in it. Now, it's not, you know, the missing puzzle piece was always what PCI thought.
Right.
Remember, Al Britton killed it in 2024. They want to blame Lance Bell or Chris Elliott, but if Al Britton votes on the bill that he had negotiated in conference committee, it passes and it's on the ballot already.
That's right.
You know,
he voted against it. He was the one man band that shut it down. It didn't sponsor it.
Yeah, he was a sponsor. He voted against his own bill. But I mean, that happens after conference committee sometimes.
It does. It does.
But now what the future has in store, the PCI does not have the leverage. I mean, they got, you know, pillowcases full of money to influence politics in Montgomery. But they don't have a dedicated member now. The guy who beat him, Terry Waters, is against gambling. They lost the gambling vote. Now they gained one probably up in Tom Butler's seat. It looks like they're going to gain one with Dan Roberts going out. There was a no vote with Rusty Glover. He's back in the state Senate. He loses. I mean, he beats Doug Harwell, who would have been a yes. It's probably a wash or a tie, but the difference, none of this is going to matter. The House is going to have their votes. A bunch of pro gamblers went down, but they still have plenty of votes to spare. The Senate, we were watching, it's going to be Tommy Tuberville just twisting a few arms, and that should be too hard because he's going to be riding in with lots of political capital.
You're exactly right. Glad you mentioned Rusty Glover. Very excited to see Rusty return to Montgomery. We disagreed on a couple of issues, but overall, we've agreed on most every position he's ever taken. He will be a reliable conservative legislator, so I'm really excited to see him come back. I'm going to make a statement, and I'd just like to get your feedback on this.
We're short on time.
I think Republican representatives and senators were very, very fortunate. More of them were not primaried in this election yesterday.
You're absolutely right. There could have been some more upsets. I think there were some that were weak, but they didn't. They just didn't have an opponent in that district. That's the way it goes, though.
4 years from now, we might be looking at an interesting situation if this emboldened people.
Yeah, well, I think maybe it's different because it's not Ivy, it's Tuberville, and maybe people have a better sense, a better feeling about the legislature. But if it continues down this trajectory, you're right. Hey, Scott Fossil, will find you online. Where can they look?
Hey, you can follow us at TrustfulTribune.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Scott Buttram. Everything you do.
Yeah. We appreciate it. Scott Buttram, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back to wrap it up here in a moment. This is the Jeff Poore Show. Cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do. It's good to see you. I must go. I know I look a fright. Anyway, my eyes and mouth.
Still smell the powder burning, and they probably always will. And
welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Tomorrow on the program, wait for Maury Fogle, a couple other guests to be named later. We'll still shuffle through some of these election results. We'll also keep our eye on qualifying. I think we got three qualified candidates so far, Jerry Carl and also Sidwell in one. And Hampton Harris in two, but that list I expect to grow by 5 o'clock on Friday. Coming up here shortly, Midday Mobile. Sean, what you got?
Hey, Jeff. A couple things I was thinking about. We talked to Jerry Carl today on the show. Also, Cameron Smith is going to join us. Erica Thomas is going to join us. What about the Al Britton and Simpson? Those two, we were watching them last night, of course, during the coverage. Those both surprised me. And that kind of turn in both those, you've explained it, a great job of explaining it today, versus the idea that, well, those were both people that signed on for the solar farm ban.
Yeah.
You know, and then they both, it's good speech.
Because their districts are so big, right? And that's a fascinating hot button. I think it's just a bigger, more, everything you can like trace back to Alabama politics, there's some kind of local connection there, right?
Yep.
And they're just more familiar with some of these other candidates.
Well, I mean, this is a big turn. I think a big turn here. There were some things that didn't surprise me last night, and there's things like that that did surprise me. It is interesting as well, the number of, we knew there'd be runoffs, but I'm a pretty good stack of runoffs coming. And reminder, folks, even if you have fatigue from, which I don't understand, but if you have fatigue from voting yesterday, we're 4 weeks out from voting again.
Well, and I'll say this. This happens every legislative cycle. Last time around, it was Tom Watley losing his race. You know, there's always these one upset that catches off guard, and it just happens to be the two of those who are in our listening audience.
For sure. So we'll talk about that. We'll break down some numbers here right after the news, and I'd love to hear from y'all. 251-343-0106.
All right, guys. I got to get out of here. I will try to do better tomorrow. Sorry, Phyllis, I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.